Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. I've already got my guest on hold. Dwayne Finley is going to be with us in a minute. But first, I want to tell you guys about the number one sponsor of this show, BetDSI.com. Guys, if there's any major world or sporting event and you want to get a little action on it, you want to wager, go to BetDSI.com. These guys have been around for over 20 years. They score an A-plus on many sportsbook review sites. They have made a reputation, a long-standing reputation, of making getting paid fast and easy. I love their odds. I appreciate their support. But I like it even more when you guys go take their money. Go to BetDSI.com right now. Use the promo code CHAEL25. They are going to give you $25 for free to wager just for registering. For my listeners only, you won't find this anywhere else. Go to BetDSI.com right now. Set up an account with the promo code CHAEL25. They're going to give you $25 to learn the site, to get used to it, to learn how to parlay if you want to. You can do straight line bets. I'm talking, guys, NCAA, NFL. You go through the list, UFC, Bellator. They got odds up there for a grappling tournament I'm getting ready to participate in called Abu Dhabi. If there is any major world or sporting event and you know the outcome, go take these guys' money right now. Use the code CHAEL25. Get $25 for free. All right, guys. And now we are joined by Dwayne Finley himself. Dwayne, I don't even know where to start, man. I consider you a friend, but you're running the site over there at Flow Combat. You got a new book. You got a whole life of stories. Where should we begin? What's new with you? How about that?
Let's talk about steak dinners. Now, I want to tell you, your listeners, that you are the gangster. I give you that, and you're a badass. But what a genuinely sweet and nice, decent human being. Yes, we're friends, and I'm honored to be so. But yeah, MMA, that's where we should start.
Oh, I thought you said steak dinners. Are we doing a steak dinner soon? Do you owe me a steak dinner? Have you lost a bet that I forgot about, and you owe old Chael a ribeye or something?
I do, and I'll be paying that back in your hometown because I always need an excuse to come to Portland. So you'll be getting that soon.
All right, so tell us the title of the book and where people can go buy it.
The title's called In the Cold Distance. Right now it's on pre-order. It's released on Halloween, so 10/31, but Amazon is where it's at right now, and it's doing pretty great. People seem to be excited about it, so that makes me excited.
I got to read a digital copy, and I really liked it for a couple of reasons. First off, I learned a bunch of stuff, but two, you just said so many incredible stories, and it sounded to me like Greg Jackson, that gym specifically, him, Winkle John, that gym really gave you an opportunity. They said you can come in. They said you can, you know, record and meet people and interview, and they're such a hotbed. I know Julie Kinsey was nice and welcomed you in, but it seems like that's kind of where it all started. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's super fair. And you know, what's crazy is that with each of those, what makes that gym so incredible is that there's a lot of egos there. I mean, you know, it's hard to balance all that on a fight team, and there's so many different types of people there. So just to kind of go in this grand observation and kind of see that's where it all kind of started for me, because then I could kind of see that, you know, things aren't as cut and dry as they appear, and then there's layers to it. And then I had the time. It wasn't just kind of stopping in for a gym with a camera. I had the time to spend a couple weeks there. So, you know, to get there and get to observe the different, kind of the way the different animals talk to each other, you know what I mean? Like, just kind of see the speed of it all. And then, you know, like I say in the book, you really get a chance to observe at its truest when things slow down. And that's why, you know, not being in a fight cycle, not being in a fight camp, but seeing how these people get to interact and how they live on their individual kind of basis, man, that's fascinating to me.
Was there any disappointment for you, like, Here's how I'll ask the question. There's been people that I have admired or looked up to from afar, and then when I meet them, I'm let down and go, man, that, you're a real jerk. Did you must have encountered some of that where you went, gosh, I was planning on doing a great story on you, but now that I've got to know you, man, I'm going to go the other way with this.
Yeah, actually, it's quite the opposite, but yes, on that point, one, Phil Davis. Like, one time, Phil Davis, I interviewed Phil. And I don't know if it was just timing or whatever, but he was just the worst interview to me. I don't know why, you know, yes and no's and everything. And then it really kind of set a weird tone with me with him. And then when I sat with him in person, completely different, completely redeemed my. So I'm like, man, this guy seems so nice. Why wasn't he nice, you know? And then I got to see, okay, I caught him at a bad time. And then that's the kind of the catalyst for all this is I realized that, man, I'm catching you, Chael. I'm catching all these guys. When they're 4 days out from a fight, from a fist fight, that's all they're thinking about. And then they got the media in their face. Okay, so how about I return the favor? I'll go to you now and go on your time, on my time, and I'll go into your world. And then so now the pressure's off, and now I can get to really see it. The other one is Cerrone. It's funny because he's got such a poker face, that guy, you know. And the first time I kind of run into him in this story, it's like he's kind of a dick to me, you know. And I'm like, all right, what did I do to him? I don't get it. And then I just realized a little bit over time, that's kind of how he tests people out, you know what I mean? Like, I think Ike Valley Flag told me, I was like, man, is he mad at me? He's like, dude, if he was mad at you, he'd hit you. I'm like, okay, he ain't that mad at me then. But no, it turns out Donald ended up getting off. So yeah, those are two kind of examples, I guess.
You know what? And those both surprised me because they're both such nice. Phil surprises me even more than Donald. Phil is just such a good dude. But yeah, I guess you're right. You know, if you catch the guy on fight week, he's stressed out. He's cutting weight. The last thing he wants to do is an interview. I could see where a guy's going to be a bit of a brat every now and then.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, and with Cowboy, it wasn't even like that. It was just more, I think it just kind of more territorial. You know, Donald, who he is. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. Like, that's not an act with him. You know that's not an act with him. That's who he is, you know, and he's that way 365 days a year. So he just likes to bust balls, and I guess I was a little new to it all, and I found my way there. But, yeah, Phil Davis, to be clear, a super sweet human being.
So you must have also seen some really great wars, though. You know, I love talking about my old days at Team Quest. We were one of the first gyms, and, you know, so we had some history there, but we had such hammers in there. You know, I know who would win between Evan Tanner and Dan Henderson, you know, fights you couldn't even get together on pay-per-view. I watched them go at it in the back. Matt Lindland versus Dan Henderson. Randy Couture versus Evan Tanner. I mean, I could go through the list of guys. I saw them fighting every day, and that's before you bring in our guests, our BJ Penns, our Boss Rutens, our Rico Rodriguez, Tim Sylvia. I'm just trying to name drop for you, but I watched these elite matches that would absolutely marquee and headline arenas and pay-per-views anywhere in the world, and I got to see them. And I just love those memories. So I would imagine, like, if I could go into Greg Jackson's gym with a nacho and a Coca-Cola and just put my feet up and watch a sparring session, I would do it. I'd be seeing Overeem versus John Jones, and I mean, I could go through the list of these matches that you only see in the practice room. You must have seen some pretty cool matchups in your tenure there.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, what stays in the gym, you know, what happens in the gym stays in the gym, so to speak. But, I mean, I get to see Carlos Condit and Cowboy Cerrone. I mean, like that, like you get to see these guys work together and you get to see them work things out, you know. And the thing is another thing in the gym, too, you know, it's absolutely, it should surprise nobody. Dominic Cruz kills everybody. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny. And then being of a Team Alpha Male, you know, what got me there, you know, there's all the rumor about, you know, TJ and Cody sparring and that tape existing or not existing. I've been there when they have live sparring on Wednesdays, and they absolutely go at it with small gloves, headgear and small gloves. And those, and they just go at it like dogs. Another place that does live sparring is Kings MMA, man. Gaslam, Dariush, those guys. They get after it. So yeah, I've seen a lot of things that are just like, man, you know, I should be getting charged right now. I'm sitting here.
Yeah. Hey, I've heard about Kings. I heard those guys come in. I heard Verdum, you know, it's a full-on session. That there's not a lot of sparring as much as there is fighting for, you know, round after round. I've heard those stories, and I've always wanted to see them. It's like, if I was ever passing through the area, I would pop in. And some days I may not join in a workout. I might want to just put my feet up and see some of these dream matches of teammate versus teammate. And then to your point, yeah, you got to kind of keep to yourself what you saw. You're privileged to be there. You can't go out and leak it. But it's hard. Sometimes you want to. You want to go, man, I just saw the best match. It was a practicing session, but it was awesome. Can't talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. But I will tell you this, as I don't know off the top of my head who he was sparring with, but Dariush was preparing for Edson Barboza here when I was out there last time. And I remember looking over to Hunter, you know, my dude at Full Combat, and being like, dude, that's not 50%. Like, they're chucking, like, you know, and just missing by, you know, they, when they connected hard. And I was like, man, this isn't like any type of controlled, you know, because he's like, okay, today we're going to throw 70 or 30. And then this was like all out, and then Gastelum was like, "That's just how we do it here." And I was like, "Oh man, you're definitely getting ready for live speed and power coming at you." But yeah, I you know, another guy too, Frankie Edgar. Frankie, I think, you know, it's one of those things where he has he shines under the bright lights. But I think there's days where Frankie has tough days in the gym. You know what I mean? I think there's some days where, you know, he works it out, but he's always going to be there over and over and over, and that's what makes him such an animal, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, there were some of those guys. Matt Lindland was one of them. Matt Lindland was ranked number one in the world, and I'd see him get his ass kicked in practice, but what some people never understood is he worked so hard. He would have morning workouts for a couple of hours. By the time he came in the afternoon, he was at 70%. Everybody else who took the morning off and is coming in at more like 90, 95%, you know, you got the best guy in the world and he hasn't won a round yet today, but there was always a little bit more to it. And I knew what it was. His battery's drained out. I suspect Frankie's probably the same way just because he's such a disciplined, dedicated worker. I would suspect when he pops into practice for the afternoon session and they're sparring, that's probably not him at his best. He's got to recharge, you know, on fight week and rest and recover and go out there and win world championships. That's my guess.
Yeah, and I think that's the correct guess too. But he also takes the path of most resistance. So he could go in and spar in his comfort level, or he could spar with a Marlon Moraes, who's faster, and spar with Edson Barboza, who's bigger. You know, and that's what Frank does to himself. So it's like when he gets out there on fight night, he's ready for whatever he's going to see, and that's why he keeps shining through time and time again. It's crazy to watch the process, you know.
So when you wrote your book, Dwayne, was any of it therapeutic for you? I mean, was any of it where you're like, hey, I got some stuff. I've got some stuff about myself. I'm going to get it out. I'm going to put it out to the world. And you feel a little bit of release from that?
Yeah, absolutely, Chael. And you know what's funny is when I first got approached to do this, I was like, man, you know, I don't really want to rehash this because I've already done all the interviews and they've already had their place. And then I got to talking with Thomas Trebasi, and, you know, he always gives me great advice. And he's like, Finley, you had a tough year that year, you know, why don't you kind of look at that? And then I got to figure it out, like, well, okay, I didn't just go out there just to go out there. You know what I mean? Like, there was some reason for it all. Maybe, you know, something deeper, and maybe I can mine that. And, you know, if there's one thing we know about each other, Chael, that we're not afraid to do that work. And I did, I mined into it, and I found out there's a lot more there than I originally thought of, you know, just kind of the symbolic gesture of going west and being on the road, you know, kind of Kerouac, you know, 50-ish beat generation kind of thing. But then also figuring out why I've done this thing for 10 years. Like, why do I cover this sport? And it all works out in there, man, you know. And you get to kind of watch that process unfold as, you know, I'm the patron saint of best intentions. You know what I mean? Like, I always try to make everything the right way, and I just kept running into these walls. And some of them were a little heavier than I had first anticipated. So yeah, getting to turn the story, then I get like halfway through it, and I'm like, oh man, this story's about me. This story isn't about fighting. This story's about me. So yeah, I went that direction, and yeah, it was therapeutic at the end. Some of the stuff sucked writing, but you know, most of it was cathartic. You know.
So how much of covering MMA has been frustrating for you from this regard? There's not a lot of yous out there, not a lot of Dwayne Finleys that will do the heavy lifting, go in the gym, do the investigative work, make sure his articles are factually accurate as well as entertaining. A lot of guys will take your work, reprogram it to themselves, put a little asterisk at the ending, you know, this was influenced by Dwayne Finley of Flow Combat, but basically steal your work. I mean, hacks, when you're out there in in the trenches, doing the work away from your family, you know, trying to make this thing monetized in some capacity, and then somebody else is just ripping you off on the internet and putting it out. I mean, how much of that is frustrating for you?
Oh, it's incredibly frustrating, and then it gets even more compounded because then that becomes the trend, Jill, and then that becomes what employers are like, oh, you know, hey, look, I remember, you know, I'm not going to throw any dirty laundry out here, Bleacher Report, but I remember saying that they're like, this is a great story, but it's got three or four money quotes in it. You can pull that out and make that just a quick hitter. And I'm like, no, nah, man, that's out of context. You know, like, why not make it one great story and then just let it be one great story? But that's where my like industry and my lack of willingness to compromise kind of hit. I'm a storyteller. That's what I do. And to chop that up is like blasphemous to me. But I also get where that business model went. And then we kind of parted ways on that. But yeah, on the idea, like think about that. Like you just had a great fight against Wanderlei Silva. What if somebody took the first two rounds of your fight and then, you know, they're getting paid off that too? There's no way to stop it. You know what I mean? So, it does piss me off when I do something like the stuff I've been doing for, you know, pretty much a decade. And I look and I'm like, oh, it's on 15 sites today. Oh, they sourced me. I don't make a dime off that. You know, flattery, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've just seen that as a tough struggle for you guys. You know, there's only a couple of guys in your category. Ariel Helwani would be a fine example, where you guys actually go out, do the work, do the heavy lifting. Yeah, you're respected more, but respect only takes you so far. And I've always thought, these guys got to be pissed off. You know, it's so hard. It's getting better. The world of MMA journalism or reporting is light years better than it was in the late 90s. But it's still a tough thing. You know, anybody can get in there. Largely anybody does get in there. And then you've got, you know, the Dwayne Finleys and the Ariel Helwanis out there that Stephen Morocco would be in that category, that actually go out and get it right and bring us accurate information. And I can tell you as a fan, I'm as guilty as anybody. I don't really care to fact check it, accurate or not. I'm surfing the sites in the morning, having my coffee in bed, waking up a little bit with the news playing in the background. But you guys are, you're a little bit thoughtless, a little bit overlooked, I guess. This is my way of saying thank you. Thank you for what you do. And there's many more people like me that appreciate what you do, but underappreciate how hard it is for you to keep doing it.
Well, for one, thank you. But for two, that's kind of what this book highlights, is that I think people look and they're like, okay, it's already just kind of there in their system and they can kind of just do with it what they want, but they don't realize how much goes into all of this. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's going to kind of wake some people up, is the fact that, you know, you can't just make a phone call and get this right. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can. If it's like a relative point, like, hey, man, do you have a fight coming up? Okay, cool. Confirm that news. That's done. But if you want to tell a story the right way, then you really have to do the time and invest the effort. Like, for instance, I just did a story on Cubs Swanson today. And the reason it came out and the reason that it's good is because I've spent so much time in Palm Springs with Cubs. And that, you know, he trusts me to talk about his daughter that was just born. He trusts me to talk about these things. And he knows I'm going to get it right. That's what can't be duplicated. And that's why that's why guys like Ariel and I are still here, because we have those relationships and we have that access. And that's drying up. So now you see these people who can't do it. And now kind of the fakes kind of fall away. And then they run some kind of MMA import site. They just rehash stuff anyway, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, of course I know what you mean. I read that stuff every day. Guys, we've all seen the mouth-watering healthy smoothie on Instagram or on Pinterest. Now, that's the kind of thing we should be eating. But who's got the time to make it every day? Wouldn't it be great if you could get those picture-perfect nutrients without having to hit the farmer's market and chop up a million fruits and veggies? Well, now you can get all those superfoods super fast with Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest sends superfood eats straight to your door with your choice of smoothies, activated breakfast bowls, or nice cream, which is a vegan sundae. Each single serving cup is ready to blend or heat. Cups are stored in the freezer, so they're ready whenever you are. Their produce is organic and unrefined and looks as amazing as it tastes. You can actually see the whole ingredients when you open the cup. Daily Harvest freezes all their ingredients at peak freshness, sealing in the nutritional value. Preparing each cup is insanely easy. Just add water. You can even substitute other liquids. I like to use coconut milk. Some people, Mike Dolce, likes almond milk. Either way, your Daily Harvest cup is ready in about 30 seconds, so you can eat right away, right now. Go to daily-harvest.com, then enter the promo code CHAIL to get 3 free items in your first box. That's promo code CHAIL for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. Daily-harvest.com.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner, or go to podcastone.com/my survey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/my survey, or click on the survey banner on podcastone.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Hey, let's speculate for a minute here. There is some talk that I believe is true, that Conor McGregor is going to be fighting Nate Diaz at the end of the year. Do the trilogy, get that out of the way. Let's say that that does happen. Let's say it's Conor versus Nate. That's going to be for the title. Now, those guys want to fight over a grudge. However, because Conor's champion, that becomes a title match, so now you have to balance that against the ratings, or rankings rather, where I believe Nate sits number 7. In the meanwhile, we will have an interim champion at that weight, because Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson are getting ready to fight for that belt. I've always been a supporter of the interim title, but I've been a supporter because I thought I understood it. One of the things is, if you have an interim champion, his next fight is against the current champion, and you know, they kind of belt versus belt, and we all move forward. If we get away from that, Dwayne, if we've got an interim champion, the winner of Kevin Lee versus Tony Ferguson, but then the next championship fight isn't with them, it's with, in this case, it'll be Nate. It could be anybody, but in this case, it'd be Nate. I start to get confused why we're having the interim title. And then let's just say that that does happen, and that's at the end of the year, but Tony and Kevin Lee are going to fight next month. What do they do in the meantime? Does the winner of that fight have to sit out until roughly April or May of next year until that big match can happen? Or do they go fight somebody in between and the interim title goes on the line? And now we start to have a lineage for the interim title while we're having a lineage for the undisputed title before we get those guys together. I get confused. What do you think happens there?
And rightfully so, but this is already happening. I mean, there's already a predecessor or a precedent to this, because Robert Whittaker won the middleweight belt, but now George St. Pierre's coming in to fight Michael Bisping. And then St. Pierre's saying, well, if I beat Bisping, I'm going to 70. You know what I mean? Like, it's diluted all the way through. But the lightweight situation is even crazier, because now, you could have very well said, Tony and Kevin, you're fighting, and the winner gets next. And those two guys are like, hey, cool, as long as we're fighting, let's do it. But because they had already teased an interim with Khabib and Tony, now you have to put that on there. I think it just muddies everything. Like, the old rule of thumb, remember, was if a champion's out for a year, then you put in an interim title. And yes, November will be a year for Conor. But if you book a fight in December with him and Nate, then that doesn't count. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's all they're jumping to kind of feed some marketing aspects. They're jumping to kind of feed some other things that don't need to be fed. Just pay guys right, make the right fights, and make there a clear shot to that big strap. And that's the thing, is I don't think they can. I think the UFC, who's ever at that wheel, has been sleeping for the first three quarters of this year, and it's gone so far off course. They're like, throw an interim at them, and then that'll make it right. Well, nah, because we're smart people. MMA fans are smart, and we know that this doesn't make any sense. So I say just stick to the main titles, unless a champion cannot or will not defend in a year. Either way, which middleweight would have been good, because Bisping was out. But now they're like, if that's George, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer on either, but I'll offer you this. There might be some kind of a room for this or somewhere close. But you remember the old UFC before Zuffa and Dana and everybody got involved? So what would that be? The SEG days. Do you remember when they would do something called a super fight? And what was so great about that is they'd have a super fight, so they'd have a super fight champion, but it was very clear he's the champion for tonight. There's no lineage to this. The next time he fights, the super fight belt isn't on the line. It satisfies everything in a fair and understandable way, which is, look, we want a belt up. We've got to commensurate the evening in some way. Traditionally, you wrap a belt, or in Olympic games, you put a medal around somebody's neck, and then you all move off, and we move on with our lives. But it's just for that night. And it seemed like, look, you guys want to do this belt so bad for marketing, for a poster, so the little lady in Iowa understands there's something big on the line here. Everybody understands that image of the belt. You want to do that. But some of us other fans are pushing back going, yeah, but it's not a real belt. It doesn't come with a history prior to it or a lineage after it. The super fight, the one-night belt, a way to commensurate, a way to have it on the poster, a way to hold something up if you're the ring card girl and make everybody go ooh and ah. It seems like we could satisfy that and complete it in one night.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think you just nailed the gist of why they even get that impulse. It's like, okay, cool. We need something to promote. We need to make this a thing so people will... I can't remember which one it was. I think it might have been Toronto, where they're like, oh, you know, we need another title fight on this card to promote it. Okay. But then it doesn't mean anything. But that's the thing. If you were to say, hey, look, this is a super fight, or this is, you know, whatever, this is that one-night thing, bam, good. And then you're on to the next one. You're still in the divisional hunt, because, Joe, that's always been my favorite thing. And as a fan, before anything else, divisional pictures. If I could watch a guy rise up through the ranks, if I can watch a guy... you know, get to that title shot, it means so much more to me than just say, hey, man, we got this guy in here and we're sticking him in here. You know, nothing against Chris Carriazo, but, you know, like something like that fight didn't really mean anything. You know, it's like, okay, when you see a guy build up, like even Ray Borg this weekend, then that matters. But if you see a guy climb his way towards Anderson Silva, then that matters. You know what I mean? Then you get to form some kind of bond or connection. And I think that's one of the things you've always done really well. I think Connor's done it great. You know, I think Max Holloway's doing it really well right now, because look at that guy. That guy had to win 11 fights before he got a title shot. You know what I mean? So, yeah, divisional pictures. But I think they're just trying to mix and move parts now. And trying to do it for marketing purposes, I think it's hurting them in a big way.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's all about marketing. You know, that belt is really important to put on a poster or a billboard. People understand it. Even if they don't know the characters involved or what the storyline is, they do understand that image of the belt. So then you get us, you know, that are so close to the trees that we really understand it better. It's not just a forest issue. And... then we start to get a little bit annoyed and go, well, I can't really follow this. I don't know what it's about. It just seems like we could satisfy everything, which is your intention and protecting lineage, by making it a super fight, by just going back to what SEG did. It's a super fight, and it's going to happen to come with a belt by the end, just so we can commensurate the evening and send everybody to the locker rooms before we fade to black, roll the credit, and empty out the arenas. It just seems like maybe that's the better way to go, instead of confusing us. And confusion has actually led to anger. People that are understanding the interim are actually getting pissed off about the interim. And that includes the fighters. They're all of a sudden going, hey, you're watering this down. Let's just call it for what it is. We want this on a poster. Let's make it a super. I really think we might be solving something here if we just go back to the super fight.
I do too. But, you know, you and I are intelligent men in a wild sport, so I don't know if anybody ever listens, but they should, you know?
Yeah, and the belt is relevant, and most people never think of it this way, but throughout history, and I'm going way back in time, but it was very important that your village or your tribe had a very good fighter, or two fighters, or three fighters, because if they didn't, when somebody came in, and people always came in, it would mean your life, or your actual property, your real estate. You were fighting for real things. You were fighting for life back then. Now, we don't fight for your life. If a fighter loses, he loses some prestige and maybe a little bit of money. So because life and land is no longer on the line, we have to have something. We have to have something we're fighting over. So we created this belt, and it worked. People understood it, they respected it, and fighters were willing to sacrifice everything, put their lives on hold to be in the gym, live a tough lifestyle to try to win that belt. when you take away from that, you're really historically taking away something huge, something that took the place of life and land at one point. And whether it's for promotional reasons or not, it's still the reality that people are willing to sacrifice everything to have it. So it is very relevant that we respect that history and we make sure that it has glamour and prestige for those who wear it.
Absolutely. And you just, right there, in that minute and a half, you just summed it up. And that's it. But that's the site that a lot of people aren't looking into. It's the reasons and the motivations. And, you know, talking to yourself, talking to a lot of other fighters, that championship means something. I just want to be the best at what I'm doing, but it also means that it's a physical representation of that sacrifice that you put in your whole career, all those sessions, you know, paychecks, money, whatever, money comes and goes, but the idea of a title and championships are legacy that remains forever. So, yeah, you start playing with that, you start taking the value off that, then you are chipping away at the keystones of what makes your sport great, and that's a dangerous move, my friend.
Yeah, it really is. And everybody's intention is from the right spot. If you're the corporation in this case, yeah, you just want people to watch. You want to market it right. You want to do your job there. Make sure business moves forward. The intentions are very good. And then the fighters' intentions are very good. And the fans supporting it are very good. But if we could just sit down and write a few Bolton lines out. You know, I love what you said earlier about historically, if a champion became what we know as a closet champion, and it didn't matter the reason, whether he was hurt, unwilling, whatever the case, if he sat for 12 months, they could vacate the title, they could interim the title, they could strip him of the title, but that was the rule. It had to be 12 months. And not only did Don King and boxing follow that, followed by Bob Arum and all the other leaders of boxing, Vince McMahon even followed that, but it had to be 12 months. Regardless of reason, if we went 12 months undefeated, you were then known as a closet champion, and what they did with your belt between vacate, strip, or do an interim as they do now was all up for grabs. But now it's just so confusing. Like, I'm on the side of the company. I want to go out and promote it and explain it to people, but I'm lost. You haven't given me the tools to do that, particularly when you bring up the GSP situation. So we've got a healthy and ready Whitaker. We've got a healthy and ready Bisping. We have to put them together. We have to. Or we have to acknowledge that the interim title doesn't mean anything. And I want it to mean something. I want it to mean something for Robert Whitaker. But I'm really left without an argument. I'm left without the rhetorical skills to defend that it does, in fact, mean something when you're going to insert a GSP. I like the GSP Bisping fight. But then I am left with the reality of, but we've got a healthy and ready interim champion. So perhaps he's the one that needs stripped. Perhaps we have to fix that and just wait till he's ready for the rightful championship match.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think there's just a lot, you know, I'm a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy guy myself. I mean, I don't like that word, but I think that the truth always exists somewhere in the middle, and it takes a little effort to find it. I just thought it was so strange that Whitaker and Yoel fought for this title, and then Bisping's healthy now, you know, oh, he could fight. He couldn't fight before. Okay, and then now Whitaker, then as soon as GSP pops in, Whitaker's like, oh, I got to get knee surgery. You know, and then, okay, well, then they're like, okay, what do you think, Robert, if are you going to fight with the winner? Well, whatever they decide to do, that's they decide to do. You know what I mean? That always strikes me as strange because fighters are individually motivated people. Like, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to do what they told me, that I'm going to get what they told me I could get, and if I don't get it, then I'm going to be pissed off. But that doesn't seem to be the case here. So when people get a little too happy to kind of float off, it always kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, it does for me too. All right, let's switch gears here. Let's go back in time. Saturday, around 6 a.m. my time, 7 or 8 a.m. your time, Ben Askren, fighting in 1FC. Did you get to watch?
I did, man. It was on Flow Combat, so I got to watch it from the comfort of my from my computer screen. But, man, I'll let you ask the question, but I'm coming with dominance here. He deserves it.
Oh, I don't have any idea what you do with him. He is such a handful. You know, he's wrestling's representation of Damian Maia, where Damian Maia was a purist. He works on the other stuff in the gym, but he brings his purist skills, which we largely saw go away about 2003, 2004. You know, one guy with one dominant skill set just doesn't work. Damian Maia said, well, yes, it does. And Ben Askren says, well, yes, it does. It's so impressive to watch. Ben has no equal. I mean, nobody that can even make him break a good hard sweat over there. It's impressive, and I feel like he just doesn't get his credit. Yeah, I stayed up. You know, Dwayne, I thought that match was going on at 2 a.m. my time. So I got up. I got my little snack. I went to bed at 11 so that I got a few hours of sleep. Everything's going great. Ends up at 6 a.m. But I pushed through. I watched it. I loved it. And I'm just curious what's next. You know, Flow Combat today, I think, reported that Askren's going to fight, like, Shinoki in his, if I'm saying his name right, in his, in what's the gentleman's name? Shinoki? I need to say his name right.
Shinya Aoki.
You got the point. I was combining the first and last names, but my final analysis is this. I think that he's going to fight him in November. I like the match. I don't think there's going to be much more to see there competitive-wise, because I think Ben's going to go do what Ben does and do it against a little smaller opponent than he just did it, but I do like the match.
Well, I'll tell you this. This is the thing that, you know, people say. I saw on Twitter, people were like, oh, yeah, Askren crushed another can or whatever. Like, get this straight. The guy who won the opportunity to fight him just knocked out Luis Sapo Santos, who's no joke in any circle. You know what I mean? So Sapo's is a hard-pressing striker. This Askren took this kid, this Kazakhstan kid, and the kid didn't score, didn't land a punch. Like 275 unanswered strikes to zero. So that kind of dominance, it just can't be duplicated. So then you got to take that and you say, well, okay, MMA math, right? Okay, great. You know, Kazakhstan's not Rory McDonald or whatever, but still, look at you. You don't think that Askren could do that to Robbie Lawler? You're crazy. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah.
Askren gets his hands on you. It's just like that. It's just like you said with Damian Maia. That's why I love the comparison, because if Maia gets his hand on you and he tangles up one leg, look at Carlos Condit. Carlos Condit's good on the ground. Carlos Condit's usually pretty savvy. Nope. You know, you make a mistake. Masvidal, who's a capable fighter, had to freeze and hold himself so he didn't make a mistake, and he was willing to take the loss just by not getting choked out. And, you know, and that's the thing with Askren. He gets hold of you, what are you going to do? You cannot get him off of you. So I love the fact that Ben's never abandoned it. He stayed with strength. And I love the fact that, because I also heard that this fight with Aoki is his retirement fight. If that's true and that's the case, and he walks out at 33, 34 years old, paid and with his wits about him, then God bless.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, when you're talking about Askren crushing another can, I've heard people say that too, man. They're so resistant to give that guy his due. Ben Askren crushed a can from Russia in Bellator. Wiped the mats with him. It wasn't even close. Can. Total nobody. That total nobody came out and wiped the floor with former world champion Benson Henderson. So my relevance being, a lot of these guys at Askren's whipping, he is whipping them at the wrong time. All of a sudden, that fight that he had with the Russian guy over in Bellator starts to look a lot better once we see how great that guy is over his great performance over the great Benson Henderson. But, right, some dominoes just aren't falling into place, and it leaves these naysayers that don't want to give the undefeated 14-0 world champion his due. I get where they're coming from. You know, when you're in the world of, hey, I want to be a jerk, I do get where they're coming from. It's just not accurate. They're not going back and then looking at these guys' future. You know, you go look at Askren's wins. Yeah, they didn't look great at the time he did them. I will have to admit that. But over time, you go back and look at him, you go, oh my gosh, he destroyed that guy? That guy was really good.
Oh, absolutely. And then people always like to go back to, like, the Jay Haran fight. And people don't realize that was, like, Askren's, like, fourth fight as a professional. You know what I mean? And, yes, he's going to struggle with a guy who's got 30-some fights. You know what I mean? That's how it's supposed to work. But you look at the last of it, and like you said, it's going to age well. You know what I mean? You're going to look back and be like, man, We're not going to see that kind of dominance. And the thing about it is, the narrative part that I always dig is people are like, oh, well, he should be in the UFC and he's never going to be this and blah, blah, blah. Look at how many times that's been proven wrong, Chael. You know, oh, the WEC guys couldn't hang with UFC guys. No way. Well, that was proven wrong. Strikeforce guys couldn't hang with UFC guys. No way. belts were guys, blah, blah. If you don't think that Ben Askren could come in there, and you know who would be his toughest test? Is a fight you would never do would be Woodley. You know what I mean? Because
sure.
They know each other so well, and they're friends and former teammates. But everybody else, you know what? Ben told me once, Shale, it was kind of a, I can see why you guys are very similar thinkers, because you guys don't always tip your hand, but you always give little tells. And he said, I asked him one time, we were disc golfing. That's like his thing, right? And I said, man, aren't you worried that it's going to go down where you never got to, fight these guys or no? And he's like, Dwayne, every major person in the world that's ever competed at my weight, I've either trained with them or I've rolled with them. And I'll put it this way, I like my chances.
Yeah.
You know, in an Askren way, that's saying, you know what, I saw what's out there and I know how I fare against it. You know, I think the one that he said that he would love to see kind of goes down because there's such a versatile weapon is GSP. So if GSP is that good of a wrestler, then put that against it. And unfortunately, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's not. And that is the one. That is the one where I go, well, let's see what happens. Because George does have those takedowns on guys that he shouldn't be taken down, but he does. And then he's got that defense where he's stopping guys' takedowns. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. That's the one. That's the only one that's a question mark. The rest of them, I already know the answer. Whether Ben wants to tell you or not, I ask a lot of questions around town too, and I know the answer. It's just Ben and GSP, and you're right. We're never going to get it. It makes me mad. I'm greedy. I'm very greedy as a fan. I want it all, and I can't.
Yeah,
can't have it all, but I want it all, and we're not going to get that one. We just have to accept it.
Yeah, and that's a tough one too, man. Because you know I'm the same way. There's the fights that I want, and when I don't see them, I get mad. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, come on, we were so close to this. But at the same time, you look at sometimes that's what you have to take is the in-betweens and the world apart. Then you're like, okay, well, if timing was better, then it would. You know, I was hoping with GSP doing his, like, you know, contract thing, because I know, you know, one likes to throw out the dollars. I was hoping that would appeal. But I don't know. You know, maybe in some world that we do get to see some version of it. But, you know. Maybe we get him in the sub cage, Chael. Maybe that's what happens.
Hey, that's probably more likely than an MMA cage. You know, those guys, it's just not going to happen. And yeah, at this point, man, if those two want to go thumb wrestle, we'll take it. If that's how we can settle this dispute that we're never going to know. I mean, it's Batman versus Superman at this point. We're just going to have to sit around and talk about the different editors because we're never going to actually get to see it. So, hey, I want to ask you one final thing. John Jones, timing-wise, everything was on his side. He never made a headline, right? He made news, but it was never the headline. He was always beat out by the Conor and Floyd talk, and that fight was so great that they're still the headline, and John kind of slid under. But what's your prediction on what's going to happen? He's got the battle on two fronts, one with California, one with USADA, whichever is worse or more strict is what he's going to have to live with. He's got a maximum of 4 years. He's got a floor of 2 years. What do you think? And I know we're just guessing, but what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, you know what surprised me about this is usually there's a lot of hush-hush stuff, but, man, like you saw, I think Andy Foster spoke out saying that the test doesn't make sense. USADA said something about, you know, the dates of his test and, you know, blood coming back clean, and then even though it had already been established that what he used comes out in urine, you know, like it's just all a weird scramble of information. I'll say this. I think that, I think the middle road is somewhere that, usually because that's what happens, right? When they have a guy over the barrel, they say, okay, this is it, and that's how it's going to be, and blah, blah. And then all of a sudden when there's kind of like a gray area, like Kelvin Gastelum recently, you know, like it was reduced because of, whatever. Like, oh, we weren't quite sure, blah, blah, blah. I think that's what we see here. I still think it does John, you know, John did himself no favors or however this worked out, you know, that it's certainly a tragedy in the sense that that this guy is going to lose those years. And I would see it's not quite. You remember when they tried to throw the book at Nick Diaz and they were like, ah, well, we'll back off, but we were going to watch time ban him. I don't think it's anything like that because they realized what 4 years would be. But I think definitely he's not getting anything less than two.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you, and I don't know that they're gonna. I don't know they're gonna destroy him over this. I agree. The lifetime ban is on the table, but I think if we're reasonable and we look at the history that's been set, the precedents, particularly in California, I think we can very reasonably take that off the table. I do think that he's even in California going to have a maximum of 4 years. And I tend to agree with you that it'll probably be the minimum, which is two. I've heard people speculate that they think that'll fall in between and that'll be 3 years, but I don't know about that. I think his bigger fight is going to be with USADA, and in John's spot, he's going to have to sit for whichever one is greater. California could clear him today. USADA gives him 3 years. He's got to sit 3 years. So let's see what happens. But there is a little bit of confusion on all sides of it. And anytime you start talking about these things, people do get lost. Why was it not in the blood? Why was it not in the urine? It's very confusing. Now, there's a very reasonable answer. And USADA will come out and they'll answer that question. But until then, yeah, I guess we're just left to wait.
Yeah, and that's what got me a little... That's what this ticked me strange about the whole thing. It's like, okay, why would you come out and talk when you had half the information? You know what I mean? And usually you see Dana being super pissed about this whole, you know, when everything's go like this way, and he seemed like, oh, well, whatever. You know, I mean, I don't know. I definitely think that you definitely got to get your ducks in a row. I don't think it's wrong information, so to speak. I just think it just presented a little wackadoo, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I do. I absolutely do, which is why I think we're probably better just sit and wait. But I'm with you. I think that we're agreeing that 2 years is enough here. 2 years is probably what he's going to get. 2 years. Anytime you say two, it doesn't sound like a yacht. Well, when you put years at the end of it, yeah, we're punishing him. We're not slapping him on the wrist here. We're punishing him. 2 years, big deal.
Oh, absolutely. And then you tack on the 2 years before that, and you realize that a guy who at 28 was completely on top of the world and dominating his sport is not going to be able to compete until the time he's 32. You know what I mean? And everything in between, and what that does for, you know, confidence or physicality or anything like that financially. Yeah, you're putting a crazy mark, you know, on this career. But it's one that he's brought on himself in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's funny, man, because I spent a lot of time with John in that layoff. And, you know, he seemed to really kind of be, I don't know. I think that's why he even seems baffled himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see. All right, Dwayne, one more time. Tell us the book and where to get it.
The book is In the Cold Distance. It's on Amazon. Pre-order now. The official release is 10/31. You won't be disappointed. Chael Sonnen approves. When you get the gangster's approval, you don't mess with it. So it was great talking to you, man. I can't wait to have that steak dinner with you.
Yeah, boom. Hey, there it is. And great job writing the book. Thanks, Dwayne.
See you, Chael.
Kaboom. All right, guys. Dwayne Finley, he does have a very cool book. That isn't just a plug for the show. I read it. He sent me a digital copy. I think you guys will really enjoy it. A lot of behind-the-scenes stories, not just of gyms and of MMA fighters that you'll relate to, but his own quest. You know, his own quest. And he dealt with some... I don't want to give too much away, but he lets you a lot more inside his private life than he let on there. I teed him up for it. Talk about sobriety and some other stuff. He steered away, so I guess you got to read the book. Guys, I will leave you with one final thought until tomorrow, and that is if you are looking for a car, and it doesn't matter if it's new or if it's just new to you, go to TrueCar. Desktop, www.truecar.com. If you're listening to this show on a smartphone right now, and most of you are, go in the search engine. Just type in TrueCar. It'll bring up the app. Here's how it works. When you're ready for that car, go to the app virtually. Type in the car, year, make, model, color, CD player, whatever you want to do to the car, special rims, a canopy if you're doing a truck, type it all in. Type in your zip code. It will show you what people in your area paid for that exact same car. At that point, you will be connected with a TrueCar certified dealer. They will make sure when you get to the lot that your car is there. Your price is already determined. Most people are saving $4,000 off of the MSRP. I love that it saves you time. TrueCar. Until tomorrow, for Dwayne, for the good folks down here at the studio, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hello, this is Coach Jim Harbaugh with my esteemed colleague and co-host JT Rogan, and we're excited to announce our new podcast, Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, that's coming to Podcast One.
Each week, we'll be talking to different members of the Harbaugh family, along with athletes, celebrities, and unique guests.
On different episodes, we'll have my dad, Jack, my brother, John, my sister, Joni, my wife, Sarah, and even my kids from time to time. We'll have great guests each week, and we'll attack each podcast with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Sounds pretty good to me. So join us each Tuesday on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast here on Podcast One. Also, make sure to subscribe on PodcastOne.com, on the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts. And Coach, who's got it better than us?
I know the answer to that, JT. Nobody.